This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
This is Misrepresent, Behind the Face of Fierce Woman. Hey, fierce listeners, welcome to Misrepresent, Behind the Face of Fierce Woman. My name is Charlene Sayo, your host for the next half an hour or so, and every week I have the honor to have lively conversations with unique, trailblazing women in the arts, science, literature, music, politics, activism, feminism, and more. Today's episode is a second installment of the month-long Women in Hip Hop special series, where I'm featuring conversations with Maya Jupiter, Asa Lioness, Kinney Starr, and Anna Tiju. For this episode, I have the multilingual, multi-talented, highly experimental, politically charged, Juno Award-winning Kinney Starr. The Calgary-born, BC-based artist was recognized as a pioneer in Canadian hip-hop by Toronto's Manifesto Festival in 2011. Her music has been described as edgy and enchanting by The New Yorker, and The Record magazine has described Kinney as being a sensual, spiritual, self-possessed artist blazing her own influential trail. I caught up with Kinney last week in Vancouver during her tour for her latest album, From Far Away, where she talked about social justice over the music industry, her environmentalism, how hip-hop correlates with her Indigenous ancestry, and retiring from the music industry. Hey, Kinney, how's it going?
Hi there.
I'm so glad that you're here on Misrepresent.
Thank you for having me. It's a real honor.
Oh no, it's my honor.
No, it's really cool. I just was introduced to the work that you're doing really recently, so it's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, awesome. Mm-hmm. Now, you're here at the tail end of your tour
yeah.
for your latest album. Mm-hmm. How's it going?
It's going really good. It's a really interesting time in the music scene because the music scene has changed so much. I've been playing music for, you know, almost 20 years now, so I can see the shifts in culture. And it's really depressing. You know, it's like in cities where, you know, it used to be easy to bring, say, 500 people out. Now, like, say, 100 or 80 people will show, and I'll be apologizing to the club, and they'll be like, are you kidding? This is an amazing turnout. I'm like, what is going on? And it's, I guess, like, everybody is pretty much just on their computer, and DJ culture has taken over our sort of world, so.
And now, how do you feel, then, about the DJ culture? Do you think that that's, you know, just destroying, or is it like ruining or weakening the music industry for live acts?
Well, I think if you're a DJ, it's good, but I think like if you're making live music, yeah, it's a real different equation. So I don't know. I don't really like think it's necessarily bad or good. It just is what it is. Like I have friends who are DJs and I'm really proud of them for making a good living as DJs. So I don't really want to fault them, but certainly if you're trying to make something experimental or different, the cards are stacked against you. Like I like to experiment a lot and I just have never really been interested in trying to super fit into any kind of a particular mold, and that's not that easy of a road.
Okay, we're gonna get back to that because okay. I'm actually interested in how you're also able to prevail, although it is a challenge and you're bringing that up right now. But for your mm-hmm. latest album, From Far Away, you've done everything on it, engineered, recorded, you wrote the songs, just everything. Now, is that part of your process in terms of experimenting, or why did you choose to be so hands-on with your latest album?
Well, I'm actually, all of my records, I've been pretty much a fundamental part of the engineering and stuff. I just never totally talked about it as much because it was part of my, it's just part of how I learned to do music was through recording. Because I didn't grow up like playing instruments, so I learned music through audio investigation. Yeah, so that's why I'm really interested in engineering. And from the very beginning, I was collecting sounds, like audio sounds, like from buses and bus stations and trains and stuff. So that's always been my influence. But lately, like as I've aged as a musician and, you know, grown into the music culture. I strongly feel like it's a position of sovereignty, especially as a female in this business, because most studios, even though I seek out studios and engineers and producers that are female, but in general, you end up spending a lot of money when you work in other studios, and you are at the mercy of other people's opinions and skills, and I'm picky about how mics are placed. I'm picky about sounds that I want, and I can't really, I've been doing it long enough that I can't justify spending money to record with a bunch of people that are not necessarily going to do a better job than I'm going to do.
Okay, well then, what's the trade-off then to do it super independently? Because there is a trade-off. What have you learned, and would you change anything in terms of how you're creating your albums and doing your work?
I wouldn't change anything. I have a really good life. I make a decent living, and I set my own schedule, and I have my family's happy and my friends are happy, and so, like, I mean, I work really hard, but most of the people I know work really hard too, so there's no fault in working hard. In terms of independence, it's funny because people always see me as like an independent artist, but I've actually worked for record labels my whole life, so I don't really consider myself independent. I mean, I have independence in the way I record and the way I write, but I always work with teams. I always have record labels and agents and producers and managers and people that are assisting me on some level. Like, I think the idea that people have that they are kind of able to do something just by themselves is very narcissistic, and I don't feel that way at all. Yeah, like, I have a great record label, and I've worked for Island Def Jam and Lakeshore Records and Maple Music and Last Gang, and I work for Aporia, and like, they're all good people. So yeah, I think actually the team spirit is a lot bigger than people recognize. Yeah.
Okay, so speaking of team spirit, mm-hmm. and just collaborating and working and also giving the credit to your other collaborators, mm-hmm. you've already alluded that you like to work with women. And in fact, your performances with Tanya Tagaq, for example, mm-hmm. it's so powerful. I always think that there's just something phenomenal when it's women on stage working together. So how do you resist and prevail in an industry that really tries to pit women against each other?
That's a pretty good question, actually. I mean, with someone like Tanya, it's just we're just friends. We've been friends for a long time, and we understand each other because we both are in this business, and we're always surrounded by men. You're just always surrounded by men. So when you see another woman, it's kind of like such a breath of fresh air that I think it's a personal choice. Like, I think women get a really bad rap, actually, for being kind of catty and stuff, and that's the way the media represents us. But I don't really know a lot of women like that. Like, most of the women I know are like, we are each other's lifelines. And I don't say that mildly. Like, I'm being very serious. In the music industry, we are each other's lifelines. We spot each other in a crowd and beeline to each other. That's the way I feel anyways. I mean, maybe people would say something different, but that's my personal experience with it.
Do you think that it's helped you stay grounded? Because you seem to be somebody who's not all like, oh, I want to go crazy and be super famous and like make $1 billion.
No, I don't really. I've never had that intention in music. I've had those opportunities like to blast off and stuff. And I'm not really interested in large sums of money because I know people who have large sums of money, and it's pretty time-tested equation that having a lot of money doesn't make you happier. I mean, they've studied it at a physiological level, at a neurological level, in communities, globally, like the economics of it. Every different way of looking at wealth and fame proves the same equation, that the people aren't happier. Yeah. So I personally, like, I'm really happy with where my life is, and I've always felt like I have a lot of liberties. and I don't want to give those away. And you give those away if you adhere to the policies inside the kind of star making machinery. And I the reason I say that is because I have friends who are in it,
yeah.
And they're not happy. They don't sleep at night, and I just don't see the point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of like the star making machinery, mm-hmm. of like the music industry, yeah. and then yourself as just being always experimenting with music, mm-hmm. do you think that the fact that you are fearless and experimenting all the time, that that's how you've also been able to really succeed in the industry? Because you've had a long career, let's face it. Do you think that that's why you're able to really like just live?
I don't know. You know, like sometimes I think about it. Even on this tour, I'm just like, I can see that the live music scene has collapsed, you know, like I can see it. It's like, you know, clubs that I would normally draw 500 people to, you know, there's 100 people coming and the club owners are ecstatic, you know, or like 50 people are there and they're like, oh my God, there's so many people here. Yeah. So I can see it's a different time. Yeah. I think, I don't know. I don't really know how I've been able to survive. I'm told that I have something very specific, and I think that it's a demerit in terms of commercial sales, but it's a merit in terms of critical value. So yeah. That's what I'm told over and over again, is that I do something distinct. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, my family's happy. My health is good. Like, my family's health is good. I feel like the freedom that I have in with the business that I've chosen allows me to take good care of my family. So I wouldn't really trade that for the trappings of something like greater, or like, you know, big posters or, you know, fancy clothes, or I just don't see the point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of being distinct, one of the areas where you really stand out, mm. is that you've never shied away from a political stand, which is really, really great, but then it's also really scary in an industry that you're not supposed to have an opinion on anything. So, you know, where does that fearlessness come from?
That comes from my parents.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, my dad was a criminal defense lawyer in Calgary, and my mom was a guidance counselor, a psychologist. So I was just always surrounded by like interesting people, and like I learned really young. I was able, like my dad often would take us to court rather than to school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's like I remember at a very young age, I remember clearly understanding racism at a tiny, I mean, I was, I don't know, 10 or 7, somewhere in there, and I remember distinctly being aware, wow, when you're native and you go to court, you go to jail. Like, stuff like that was, like, that was just around me growing up. My dad worked, obviously, with people who need defense, which is, in Calgary, it's natives, prostitutes, and bikers. So it's like, I remember those lessons were very clear to me as a young girl. I was like, wow, if you're a female and you're a prostitute, you're gonna get the shit end of the stick. So those things, I think, were very fundamental to me as a thinker. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And so that's not something that you're going to compromise for your music career?
No, I don't. I'm just interested in activism, and I'm interested in controversy and conversation, and that's why I do music. And I'm able to apply melody and beats and stuff to that equation, but the conversation is about justice. It's like, that's what the conversation is always. Yeah.
Now, speaking of justice, one of your tracks, mm-hmm. That's really well known is Save Our Waters. Mm-hmm. So what inspired that track, which is absolutely beautiful?
Thank you.
Yeah, no, what inspired that?
Well, I mean, I have been trying to write, I've been writing about water for since I started doing music. There's always references to water and rain and rivers and lakes and loons and birds and storms, right? Like, it's through my whole catalog, but it crossed my mind as the kids in the family started to get older, and a lot of them are swimmers. They really like being outside. And I can see that water quality is at a decline, and aquifers are struggling, and Specifically up in Lake Huron, where my family, my grandfather built a place in the 30,000 Islands area when my dad was a little boy, and we've watched the water levels drop a lot. And the St. Clair River was dredged in the 50s, but it was too deeply dredged, so the lakes are basically being tapped and the water's being sent down south, and all the wetlands, and the wetland species are drying up, and so like the microbiology of that area has changed significantly. And so this, all these changes, and then the pipeline, obviously the conversation around the pipelines is huge, and it just became pressing for me. I was like, I can't just write about water from a metaphysical or a metaphorical perspective. I have to write it about it literally, because we are at a precipice. We have a terrible government.
Yeah, we do.
And we have people continuing to vote this like wax mannequin into our leadership position. And it's just like, I don't understand what's going on. Like, I don't understand how Harper got into office, and I don't understand how he stays in office, and I have real questions, because our water supplies, like, eventually, like, from a long-term perspective, our water, we have so much water here that, and what's going to happen long-term is that communities will come here for our water.
Yeah.
And it's not sustainable. Like, the whole way that everything functions is not sustainable, so that's why I had to write that song. I had to do something.
What's going on with the environment and just with our world? Is this why you also decided to join David Suzuki in his Blue Dot Tour?
Well, no, they approached my agent for, like, who, you know, artists that would be interested in, you know, working on this concept. And they knew that I was already writing about environmental issues and stuff. So, and it just fit into my touring schedule. So I would have actually liked to have been taken more shows, but I already had my tour booked. So I just got on two of the dates.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you done any dates yet?
Yeah, I played the Ottawa event, and I'm about to play the Victoria event.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how have they been going? Like, how was the Ottawa event?
It's pretty stimulating to be in an environment of speakers and people that all care about the same thing, because in the music industry in general, like, self-promotion and the way sort of social media works, it's all about self-promotion. So it's like cool to be around people that are, they're like, yeah, it's not really about self-promotion, it's about activism.
Okay.
That's good. It's a little bit different than what you have to do.
Yeah, it's a different feeling.
All right, so I just want to get back to your music.
Sure.
And all your many different influences. And what I found really interesting is that you said that prison recordings and really deep old blues and instrumental music has this hip-hop beat to it.
Yeah, it really does.
Okay, let's go into that.
I don't know. I mean, I just think that hip hop has like a very contemporary reputation, but I hear a lot of influence and like a lot of hip hop in a lot of old recordings.
Okay.
Like the poetry, like the telling of stories, the rhythmic telling of stories. And there's prison recordings from the southern states, and it's like chain gang kind of recordings. And it's like straight up lyrical storytelling, like beat driven storytelling, and I cannot hear anything but hip-hop in that. And I know that, I understand that hip-hop in North America came out of like disco, like, you know, as a response to disco and you know, Kool Herc and block parties, and I understand the history in North America of it, but I just think there's like a protest side in hip-hop that I still hear it in some like modern hip hop, but in a lot of older music, I'm like, yeah, this is like the, for me anyways, as a listener, it's the roots. Yeah, it's like folk music, like protest folk music.
So is that what hip hop is to you? Because it's so different for other people. Maya Jupiter, who's part of the Women in Hip Hop series, because she's, you know, she was born in Mexico, raised in Australia, now based in Los Angeles. Her mother's Turkish, her father's Spanish. She says all of that to her is hip hop.
Yeah. Yeah, I really feel like, you know, for me, it's like I grew up in Calgary And I listen to a lot of metal and a lot of rap music. And a lot of new wave music too, because I had an older brother who was into new wave music, like Flock of Seagulls and New Order and stuff like that. But yeah, I just feel like the way we think about hip hop is just what the media feeds us. Same as the way we think about women, it's what the media feeds us. Or, you know, water, like the media tells us, hey, don't worry, man, we got plenty, it's cool, desalination plants, they're gonna save us, don't worry, you can abuse water. So I feel like the way media tells us about everything is just inaccurate. It's just inaccurate over and over and over again. And the same goes for hip hop. The only hip hop that we have access to as, you know, broad-based consumers is, I mean, people think Iggy Azalea and Kanye and Black Eyed Peas. That's really what, and I'm like, no, it's so much broader than that. So yeah, I strongly feel and define hip hop as like, originally it's like, you know, real fashion, real storytelling, real connection to your community, and like you're talking about what's going on with your people, and that side of it is really not represented in the media.
And I wish it was.
Yeah. Now,
I wish more of that like was represented. Now, you're also a poet. Was it poetry that influenced you to get into hip hop, or was it the other way around?
Well, I've been writing poetry since I could write, so since I could put words down on the page.
Yeah.
So I was able to write by about 4 years old. So there's my mom has poems of and little drawings of like cats in windows and me doing poems about them before I was even in kindergarten. So yeah, it's poetry.
All right. Now, recently on your Facebook page, you posted that you have an issue or something feels wrong when somebody posts up an entire album of yours or an entire performance.
Yeah.
So what is it about that that's really super disturbing?
Well, I mean, I've been thinking a lot about this because it happens all the time. And, you know, people listen to music on the way to work and they listen to music when they're doing the dishes and all this stuff. And music, it gives people a lot of joy. And I think there just needs to be a little bit of a consciousness around how much work we put into making product. And so the comparison I have is like, if you were at work and you just had someone videotaping you your whole day at work, just right up your ass and in your face, and like, It is an invasion of privacy to me, because we put a lot of time and energy and work into making something beautiful for people. So I don't, you know, I've been putting up with it for years because it's a digital era. But recently when I was like, you know, I was on my moon, I was like on tour, on my moon, none of my clothes fit because I gained like 15 pounds when I'm bleeding. And so it's like, you know, my clothes look terrible. I look terrible. I was like barely getting through the show, and people are logging the whole show up from like, you know, these terrible perspectives, and like the sound is bad. The show is bad. I look bad. I look sick. I look tired. And I'm like, couldn't you just maybe just put like 20 seconds up? Or you could ask me and say, hey, I'm going to log your whole show. Is that okay? And I would say, actually, no, not really. Like, I am really tired, and this is my job. And when you log my whole show up online for everybody to see, it actually is a disservice to my industry and to like my job. So, I mean, I also get the fact that it's a free world. People have cell phones, whatever. We live in a first world economy where everyone has a cell phone. I get both sides of it, but I just feel like we need more consciousness around how much we record. Mm-hmm.
But do you think that's really going to change?
It's not going to change at all. Excuse me, what I'm going to try and do is just request that people are like conscious And they're probably just going to keep doing what they do. And I'm just going to retire from the music business because I never got into art to be kind of like on display. I got into art for social change. So I'm not here to be a puppet that people just film and like broadcast. It's not what I'm here for. So I'm probably at the finishing stage of my work publicly like that. So yeah, I don't want to be a part of that world. Yeah, I don't want to be a part of that world. I like to make things that are really beautiful. I don't feel like I need to like broadcast every single thing. It's not my thing. Yeah.
I'm going to get back to that as the final question. But before we go, you did an interview a few years ago, and I'm paraphrasing you, but you said that as a woman who carries Native blood, but has white, you know, in terms of
privilege.
That hip hop allows you to be very honest about questions in your life. Mm. So
I'm like, wow, I sound smart.
So what is the correlation with your Native ancestry and hip hop?
I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of conversation around that's around like why it is that Native people make such good rap music. Because I think we do.
Oh no, you guys
are phenomenal. There's no question that like some of the best hip hop that's coming out of Canada and the States is coming from Indigenous people. So, but I don't really know. I have thought about it. Like I'm like, what is it that, you know, makes Natives so good at hip hop, right? And I mean, I used to think that it's kind of like a continuation of powwow. And I have written essays and stuff on that subject. And I used to think like, you know, hip hop is kind of like modern powwow without all the like candy floss and Coca-Cola and stuff, right?
Yeah.
But I don't really know, you know, like I just, sometimes I feel like Native people are inherently, and this is going to sound sort of racist, but I do feel like Native people are inherently talented and inherently like in the Native community, we joke about, we're like, yeah, you can always tell when you're in the room with a bunch of Natives because everybody's beautiful. Right? But there is something about that, like where, and I, maybe it is like a spirit of, you know, as someone who's mixed, it's like I'm white, so I can look from the outside too, right, into the Native community, and then I'm Native, so I can look, you know, from the inside out as well. So I can say, like, as a white person looking in, I can definitely say that there is a spirit that Native people have, and I think it is inside my own family, for example, like with my father, like the qualities of my dad that I consider Indigenous qualities are his just a sense of rebellion and a sense of resistance, and there's like a sense of like, you know what, fuck you, like, and that, you know, it's like a sense of power and strength and like, no, I'm not gonna actually just fold over and die. And I do think that that is one of the things that you can hear in, that I can hear in not just hip hop, but it is specific to hip hop in the conversation I'm having with you. And it's like, it's a sense of like, I belong here. This is my land. And like, I'm going to, you know, do whatever I want to do. That is something that you see in and among Native people. You know, even really impoverished Native people, there's like, you know, when I'm, you know, on Hastings Street, like a lot of people, you know, I have like, my dad is an addict of the highest order. Like when I'm down there, everybody reminds me of my dad. And it's like, there's a sadness and stuff, but there is also a thing of, it's like a poise or grace or, yeah. So clearly I don't have the words for it really, but I know what I feel inside about this. Yeah.
No, you got the message. I got the message. You were quite eloquent. Okay. And thank you, because that was a very honest answer. Mm. Now, for the last question then, you said that you're sort of at the tail end of your career. So what are you going to do?
Well, I got into music late in life. Like, I'm in my 40s. I started music in my 20s. And I never thought I would be doing music, because I didn't really grow up doing music, you know? And my interests are, like, I'm interested in art and in writing and stuff. Like, mostly I write, you know, that's what I do. But I am also, I'm interested in design. Like, I see a lot of, in music, I see design. So I see, like, in arrangements, I see, like, color combinations and stuff like that. So, but also I really like taking care of elders. That's actually the main thing that I like doing. And I've been doing it a lot over the last 4 years, and I want to, that's kind of where I see myself spending more of my time, because as a musician, you're just constantly on the road, and people have, they think you're like really wow, but really you're just kind of trying to find time for your family. So that's my goal, is to be able to spend more time taking care of elders. It's really hard work, actually, but I really like being around people that are in their palliative stage and that are just a lot older than me, so.
Kinney, thank you so much. I'm quite humbled and honored to have this conversation with you, and I actually look forward to the day that you retire from music.
Oh, good. Yeah, I think it's going to be really beautiful. And I really feel like music has, I've learned tons from being in music, but there's a lot more to learn. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
That brings us to the end of Misrepresent Behind the Face, a Fierce Woman special series, Women in Hip Hop. You just heard my conversation with Juno Award-winning multilingual artist Kinney Starr. For more information about Kinney and her music, check out kinneystarr.ca. You can listen to past episodes of Misrepresent at charlenesayo.com, and make sure to follow me on Twitter at justcallmeshar. Special thanks to Andrew Sayo and Irene Cloma. Intro and outro music by Emily Simone, and additional music by Stealing Orchestra and Rafael Ginocchio. Tune in next week for another Fierce episode featuring another fierce woman in hip-hop. This is Misrepresent Behind the Face, a Fierce Woman.